Today, we enter into the dizzy heights of Mark 13. It is scripture that contains mysterious, almost code-like, apocalyptic images. It's okay, thanks. That baffle or provoke or irritate, mystify even many readers of this text. It's clever writing, using and adapting Old Testament themes and sources. It's powerful writing, not just because of the poetic and the evocative imagery, but more so because of the socio-political context that swirls in the background for all of the readers. And that is the barnstorming Roman siege of Jerusalem and the subsequent destruction of Solomon's rebuilt temple in 70 AD. Scholars are really undecided whether Mark is written before or after this Roman conquest. But what is clear is that the community to whom Mark writes is immersed in a time of great upheaval. Rebel forces and dreams of liberation from Roman occupation dominated them, dominated their thinking. But equally, so too did fear and confusion. After a revolt, a significant revolt in 66 AD, one Sestus Gallus, the Roman legate of Syria, marched toward Jerusalem to restore order. And according to one commentator, Gallus occupied the northern part of the city of Jerusalem, but was turned back by the rebels. And with that, there was euphoria in Jerusalem and throughout Palestine. They thought and felt freedom. Against all odds, outnumbered and outarmored, the rebels turned away their oppressors. But it was fleeting, as we know. Vespasian, one of Rome's great generals, was dispatched to bring order, pacify Palestine, which he duly did, eventually. The rebels and the resistance were overpowered, and after many months of pitched battle, Jerusalem finally fell, and the sacred temple, the center of cultic and Judaistic faith and life, was burned to the ground. So Mark is writing to this situation of war, and he's writing to those who were called and felt called to be part of the resistance, this longing for restoration of Israel, the call to take up arms in a war that was a sure sign of the messianic age, the messianic return, the return of Israel as it once was. But he's also writing, Mark, to those who took no part in it, to the Christians who saw no value in it at all. Perhaps even to the commoners who just wanted to get on with life and faith, and perhaps who just wanted peace. So into this situation, this cocktail of conflict and emotions and experience, Mark draws the sayings of Jesus and the rich apocalyptic vision to rally the church, to mobilize them, to hold them steady. And if you haven't heard already, this thread runs right throughout this chapter in various words, but it's the same thread. Stay awake. says Mark. Beware that no one leads you astray. This war will end and there will be vindication for Israel, but not as many of these zealots have demanded. There will be many who claim that they know, that they have the messianic credentials, that the end is nigh, follow them. All sorts of conjugations of deliverance contrived out of fear. Beware, says Mark, of all this nonsense. No one knows the end, but hold fast. Stay awake. Beware too that there will be desolation. There will be misery. There will be the anguish likened within this imagery of the birth pang. Not just a woman's experience, but an image of conflict of an emerging nation. Do not retreat from the faith, says Mark. Stay awake. Do not succumb to the vision wrought by conquest, but something is building, know that, and hold on. The Son of Man will come. A revolution is happening. But hold firm in the faith. The angels are being sent out to gather the elect, to enliven them, the Christians. The foundation of the heavens are shaking, and there will be a restoration. The Son of Man is harvesting a new world order, and we, the faithful, need to hear the trumpets calling. Listen, says Mark. Listen to the strong voice, the voice of Jesus from Nazareth. He is the true architect of the new day, and it is modeled on his cross, radical compassion, not violent confrontation. Stay away from the false ideologies loyal to radical resistance. Jesus, the Son of Man, is coming. Don't fall asleep like those disciples did in Gethsemane. There will be justice and peace, but not yet. And not like this. Stand firm. Stand at the ready. Remain attentive. Vindication will come. Keep the faith. Stay awake. On my wall in my office is a sign that reads, "I have a dream." And you can probably guess that it comes from the famous saying of the great reformer and preacher and civil rights, the civil rights campaigner Martin Luther King Jr. And I use it for me as a reminder of the prophetic thread that is so much part of faith, to hold me to account and to keep me focused. One of his great sermons, in my opinion, was preached at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on the 31st of March, 1968, an amazing sermon. And the sermon was laced with protest and anger at the Vietnam War. And of course, too, laced with the racial injustice of the Afro-American community. And too, with a denouncement of poverty in the U.S. And King called upon the people of the congregation who were gathered in Washington that day to hear him, to hear the voice of God. And to hear the call to stand firm in the faith. And his sermon was entitled this, "Remaining Awake." Remaining awake through a grand revolution. His text was based on the book of Revelation, one of the main New Testament apocalyptic writings. It's had a journeyed career in the canon of the Bible, but I say thank God it's there. Mark 13 is a little microcosm of the book of Revelation. But interestingly, while the text was based on Revelation, the main thread of the sermon for Martin Luther King Jr. in this sermon preached to Washington in the cathedral was the thread was based on one of the more familiar stories of American folklore, a story about Rip Van Winkle. King loved the story. This story was set in colonial America, the story of a man who lives in a small village at the foot of the Catskill Mountains in New York. And one day, Rip wanders into the mountains with his dog and runs into a group of strange Dutch men. And he enjoys a stiff drink with them and falls asleep. For 20 years. And as you can imagine, when Rip wakes up, he discovers shocking changes that is around him. His dog is gone. His beard has grown incredibly long. His house is in complete disrepair. His wife and children are gone. There's no one living in the town that he recognized. And Rip learns later that his wife had died, passed away. All of his close friends had either died or moved away as well. And while Rip was asleep, everyone that he cared for was gone. His life had passed him by. King loved this story, used it several times in his sermons. But in the sermon, this one that he preached to the cathedral, to the people in the cathedral, he said this: "The thing we usually remember about the story is that Rip slept for 20 years. Life passed him by. But there's another point in the story which is almost completely overlooked. When Rip went up to the mountains, a sign in the local tavern had a picture of King George III. But when he came down, it had a picture of George Washington. So, King says, the most striking thing of this story of Rip Van Winkle is not that he slept 20 years, but he slept through a revolution. The American Civil War. And with that, King challenged his listeners. My friends, there is a revolution happening. One day we will have to stand before God, the God of history. And we will talk in terms of the things we've done. I can hear him preach it. I don't know about you. We will have to confront God and talk about the things that we have achieved. And yes, we will be able to say that we have built gargantuan bridges to span the seas. That we have built gigantic buildings to kiss the skies. And yes, that we have made submarines to penetrate the oceanic depths. And we've brought into being many other things with scientific and technological power. But in it all, says King, I wonder what God would say. That was great, but it's not enough. I have a different barometer. For I was hungry and you fed me not. I was naked and you clothed me not. I was devoid of a decent house to live in and you provided no shelter for me." And King says, what are we doing for the least of these? we doing? And he says, we are in a great period of change. There are things that are happening that are not right. And that we must adopt new attitudes and outlooks that this new change demands of us. And if we don't, we do what Rip did. Not only do we fall asleep to 20 years, but we fall asleep to the revolution. And that, I suggest to you, in this story, using Martin Luther King, is the guts of what Mark 13 is about. We are not at war, but there are still things impacting our community that are not right, calling us to make a stand. There's still the rumblings of a revolution, a covert one perhaps. And the challenge for you and me is not to sleep through the trumpet call of faith, but to stay attuned, to keep awake. Coming back to Australia, I wonder if you agree with me that among the many things that we have noticed is how easily people stop becoming people to us when we are hurried or occupied or bleary-eyed. The people become things, objects, mechanisms in the machinery that bring to us what we want, or obstacles and competitors that threaten us from acquiring what we want. The political landscape that we return to is so dehumanizing. We talk of policy without seeing the human consequences. We talk of refugees and human anguish as if they were a threat to us and our survival. But friends, even in church, we gather and operate in our own little conclaves, almost oblivious to the little, quiet, lonely voices around us. The insignificant, isolated ones. The older ones, perhaps, but not just them. The older ones who sit in the armchairs at home wondering whether they matter anymore. If we're not careful, we can become so distracted by the things that don't matter, so driven by the things that are of little account, or so tired or burnt out and spiritually exhausted that people around us stop being human to us. If we're not careful, we can lose sight of people, of purpose, of what matters most. And Mark 13 says to us, stay awake. Be attentive. Note the movement of the Spirit and hear the whispers of God. Discern the presence and the power of God among us and beyond us. The disciples in Mark's Gospel in particular, who hiked to the mountaintop with Jesus, almost missed the transfiguration because they were sleepy. In the Garden of Gethsemane that I've mentioned, on the night in which the disciples knew would be Jesus last among them, they fell asleep. If it hadn't been for Mary and company on Easter morning, the disciples would have slept through the resurrection of Jesus. We cannot dare do the same as people of faith. We cannot dare sleep through the revolution. And the call from Scripture to us all is this, stay awake. It takes discipline, commitment, But it means we see the world differently. When we stay awake, we have eyes to see. We become alive to opportunities, to wrestles, to despair that others may not. Alive to questions like, where is God in this? What is the call of Jesus to that? We notice things, we notice people, and when we are alive to that, we practice and live resurrection life. I want to conclude with King. He said this in the sermon. There comes a time when one must take the position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but he must do it or she must do it because conscience tells him or her it is right. On some positions, says King, cowardice asks the question, is it expedient? And then expedience comes along and asks the question, is it politic? And vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? So today, just as it was in Mark's day, and as it was in King's day, there remains the need for people of goodwill to join together in a massive act of conscience. And the gospel call of each one of us is to continue the prophetic challenge, to be courageous, to be vigilant, to be awake to all that God is doing, and to continue doing what's right until it's finished.